My name is Jerry, and this is the Wild Eye Podcast. Lower Zambezi story, leopard hunts baboon. Hey everybody, my name is Jerry, I'm from Wild Eye, and there's nothing like a good story told around a campfire. Now, I can't help you with a campfire unless you pause right now, you go and build yourself a campfire, and then you turn this back on. But in this particular one, Michael tells us a story about, well, I'm going to let him share it with you, one of the craziest sightings he's ever had. And these things don't come around often. It's always amazing when it does. So, yeah, grab yourself a coffee, a whiskey, or a nice glass of red wine, and enjoy Michael for a story from the Lower Zambezi.
Hello, everybody. My name is Michael Laubscher, and today I'm going to be discussing and sharing one of the craziest moments I've ever got to experience out on safari. I've been guiding for, or in the industry for, going on 13 years, and I've come to know that there are moments in the bush that'll literally stop you in your tracks, where the wild shows you something so raw, so rare, and so real that I know this particular scene and sighting will stay etched in my memory forever. And I'm going to be taking you on down a memory lane on a safari I hosted in the Lower Zambezi last year. It was a private tour I was hosting. And if you don't know where the Lower Zambezi is, you might know of the World Heritage Site across the river from the Lower Zambezi, called Mana Pools National Park in Zimbabwe. Now, the Lower Zambezi National Park is pretty much literally across the river, just on the Zambian side of the mighty Zambezi River. And this is found in the southeastern side of Zambia. And it's a place of beautiful, dense forests, winding waterways around every corner, where predator and prey dynamic is somewhere, and predator dynamic is somewhere that I'd never imagined it could get to. It's a home of fascination when it comes to the wildlife dynamics. Animals in the Lower Zambezi day in, day out, rewriting the books that I've spent all these years reading and studying, and documentaries I've watched from. I remember that one of the first leopard sightings I ever saw in the Lower Zambezi was a mother, her two-year-old cub, and her three-month-old cub all living together, which for leopard, that is damn weird. That's not normal. That two-year-old cub should have been long gone and kicked away by mom. But the three of them were living in what seemed like a mini lion pride, but they were just leopard. Mom would hunt and the two babies would play together as if they were, look, they are siblings, they are related, but they're very different generations. They're 2 years apart. This ain't normal. And for a very long period, this is how these cats were living. It was so bizarre, but so incredible to witness that and photograph that and be a part of that. But that's not the topic I'm speaking of today. The Lower Zambezi is also home to a mega pack of wild dog who are so successful that both the alpha and the beta female will give birth to pups almost every year, which increases the size of that pack tremendously every year. And due to the number of these dogs, they're either hunting 6-7 impala a day, or another thing that blows my mind and is probably the only pack ever recorded to do so, if I recall correctly, who actively hunt fully grown buffalo. I mean, a pack of dogs hunting buffalo, that is just next level crazy. But again, that's not what I'm going to be talking about yet today. I was fortunate to witness that last year, a pack of dog chasing a big bull buffalo around for some time. There wasn't a successful hunt, but still bloody mind-blowing to be a part of. But the predator-prey dynamics in this area and the predator on predator, like, the dynamics of that entire area is just fascinating. And like I said, they've got these beautiful waterways around every corner. The diversity in not only wildlife, and, I mean, if you've heard of mana pools, good. You can picture, if you close your eyes, you can see a mana pool seen in front of you. The Lower Zambezi's got just that. I've had more spectacular elephants in forest scenes in the Lower Zambezi than I've ever had in mana pools. But over and above that, the predator sightings, the diversity of activities in the Lower Zambezi absolutely thumps mana pools way out the park. Way, way, way out. Predator sightings way better. The park is more controlled and better managed. There is water-based activities, which you can do, maybe on the main river, on canoes or boats, but the channels within, closer to the mainland in Zambia, is something that is just next level thrilling and exciting and just such a different take on safari. So that diversity aspect makes the place just so epic. And what I'm going to be chatting about today is a sighting that I had on a private safari there last year, which actually happened on the second afternoon we were there, which, I mean, like, wow, how do you lift the bar after this? But it was a sighting in which a leopard, and I was astonished when this happened, but a leopard successfully hunted and took down a baboon. And now, I don't want this episode to be about, oh, shame the kill and how mean. Because, I mean, animals need to survive. And that leopard's got cubs who needs milk. So that food chain is real. But this episode is going to be more about, well, I'd like to try and get the tension across as to what we were feeling during this moment, because it was it was crazy. This interaction between some of the two most fascinating species and intelligent species in Africa, being the baboon and the leopard, and what this encounter teaches us about survival and instinct and adaptation, and again, it comes true to the saying I always say out to get or to guess out in the field, is just always expect the unexpected, because I want this to also be an episode in which reminds you as the listener, if you ever head out on safari again or planning to, is just to know that anything is possible at any time. So how this all unfolded is we head out on a morning safari from Kutali camp. We were staying at Classic Zambia camps, which hands down best camps in the Lower Zambezi. So if you want to go on safari in Zambia and the Lower Zambezi, check them out. Very rustic, raw, authentic, beautiful, incredibly well-trained staff. Food's amazing. Everything's just top-notch. But we head out that morning and we spent beautiful moments with a massive elephant bull in the forests within the Lower Zambezi. So these forests, it's these winter thorn trees. And within it's like a blue hazy glow. And it's just such a breathtaking scene. So we spent some time with that elephant that morning. And it was a slightly slower morning, as we found another elephant thereafter. And things were pretty scattered, few and far between. But we started off our morning following up on alarm calls from monkeys, and we raced into the area. We saw a leopard track, but we didn't find it. So spend time with these elephant. And on our way back, we got a call from on the radio from one of the other guides in our camp saying, hey, we've just found a leopardess in this particular area. Come check it out. So we moved in there, watched her. She was a slightly, she was a very small leopard, but a slightly older girl. So well experienced. Well, she's lived a life, put it that way. And she was just kind of taking it easy, taking it calm. And it was believed that she had cubs at the time. And she was just relaxing under some dense vegetation, and it wasn't really the best scene. And we were like, oh, great, cool. Second afternoon, and we got to see this leopardess, which, yeah, was really special and really cool. We made our way back into the camp, enjoyed a bit of downtime, some lunch, and just the beautiful scenery of Kutali Camp overlooking the Zambezi River. You're right on the banks. We even had an elephant come into camp that, midday, walk from back of house, right through past the main area between the rooms, busy feeding on the seeds of these Wenzelthorn. And then we actually got to meet Carl, one of the co-owners of Classic Zambia, for the first time during this trip. And we got to chatting, and we got on really well. He got to chatting with the guest, Jen and Brian, that I was hosting. And we all just got on like a house on fire. And Carl was like, no worries, I'm gonna jump on the vehicle with you guys this afternoon and come out on drive. And we were like, oh, that's brilliant, great, cool, let's do it. And it was such a good vibe and attitude happening all around. And what we did is we got in our vehicle, and this leopard that we saw earlier that morning was not far from camp at all. So we went straight there. And we went to the bush that she was lying under, and there was no more leopard to be seen. So myself, Carl, and Richard, and Carl trains a lot of his guides there, and many other guides within Zambia. But we all got out the vehicle to kind of assess the scene and see which way she went, because we saw there were tons of baboon track and sign all over the place, but like a whole troop. And we saw where the leopard was lying. We saw how she got up and kind of twisted and turned her feet and kind of ran off in a direction away from where the troop of baboon were coming from. And this entire troop literally must have just swarmed around this little piece of vegetation that she was hiding under and chased her away and out the area. Because you need to know that one-on-one, like a female baboon and a female leopard could probably take each other on. A big male baboon and a female leopard, or that leopardess, will probably respect that baboon quite a bit and rather run off. But now think of the force of, say, 40 baboon who live in the troop just suddenly deciding, well, we're going to chase this leopard out the area and mob her out of here, because she is a threat to them. A leopard's a threat to anything, really. I mean, they've probably got the most diverse menu, if you're looking at a predator menu chart, if I may. Leopard will probably be the most adaptable and have the widest and broadest range of things that it will actively seek out to hunt and eat, more so than any other predator. So baboons see leopard as a threat, for sure. But that being said, a baboon, especially a troop of, say, 40, 50 baboon, can be like, that's like life-threatening to a leopard, particularly a small, older leopardess. You think of a male baboon's canines is longer of that of a male lion's canine. It's not as thick and robust, but they're long. If that thing rips into that girl's flesh or into her arm, if a predator gets wounded, that's her done, especially solitary predators like leopard. You get a serious injury or a serious bite from a baboon to your leg and rips you up, that's your hunting pretty much done. If you can't hunt as a predator, as a solo lone predator, you ain't going to eat. And therefore, sadly, you will die. So she got up and just bolted and ran away from this troop who came mobbing her to chase her out the area. I've seen that happen a number of times in person, which it's loud, it's screaming, it's shouting, it's absolute flippin' pandemonium. But this is what happened, and we thought, oh, that's a bummer. We were hoping we'd come back and spend the afternoon with this girl and just enjoy the sighting of a leopard. But she was gone. She was chased away. We kind of looped around the area, but drove around. We couldn't pick up on anything. We didn't find her. And so we decided, well, cool, let's make our way out and try and find some elephants in the forest, or maybe the pack of dogs are out hunting, whatever it may be. And we had probably been, and we left camp a bit earlier, so we'd probably been driving in the opposite direction as to where she was for about maybe 5-10 minutes. And again, we get a call from the same guy who found her that morning. He's like, hey, I've just relocated this leopard. Come back. And we were like, oh, you've got to be kidding. We were tracking her in the morning. We didn't find her, but the other guy did. Same thing happened in the afternoon. But we're very grateful that he called us back And we turned around, made our way back into the area, and we could hear, as we were approaching, we could hear this like little high pitch, like a meow, meow. And we were like, oh, wow, we're like, what's going on here? And I just thought there was a bit of alarm calling happening. And as we kind of pulled into the scene, we saw this leopardess sitting on the ground, looking up into what I'm pretty sure is the tallest winter thorn tree in the Lower Zambezi. It grows straight up. But if I kid you not, if I look at a photo of this tree, that thing was easily like 3-4 stories, no, even more, 5 stories tall. It was a massive, massive, massive tree. And she was sitting just looking up into this tree, and we heard this. And as we scanned up into the trees, we could see this one young baboon, a young female baboon, sitting in the street, looking down at the leopard, like doing like a little contact distress call, trying to get its family to come in and help it. Because obviously, baboon as a baboon, it's a small little animal. But when it comes with its numbers, which, I mean, that troop was probably around 40 or 50 baboon. I mean, then that's a force to be reckoned with. And we all started getting like super excited. We were like, oh my gosh, this leopard is going to try, like, well, she's going to try and hunt this baboon. Like, this is crazy. And we started scanning around, and we could hear the troop. Well, they were probably 100, 150 meters away from us. But they were just turning such a deaf ear to the distress alarms and little barks from this young female baboon. And they weren't coming back. I mean, they fought their forts. So they chased this leopard away. And they got out of there. And now while we were sitting there, we were trying to figure out so many different things. It's like, why isn't the troop coming to help? Why is this one still here? And what's going to happen? There's no chance she's going to get this thing. Because it's such a rare and unheard of thing and behavior. I mean, there's reference in just as to how rare this is in like the BBC documentaries, films, write-ups, Panthera studies, which highlight just how unusual this behavior is. Because as I've mentioned, a baboon of that size was probably no threat to that leopard whatsoever. But if that troop had come back and they realized that this leopard is trying to hunt one of their family members, I mean, they would have mauled and annihilated that leopard. They would have killed her. Not only is a baboon an incredibly difficult target because of how agile it is in and amongst the canopies and the trees, but their numbers is, I mean, me standing facing off with a baboon is scary enough, but like if a troop's around me and I'm like, there's something about it. You get this eerie feeling about you just don't know what their next move is going to be. And there's just so many of them. So we were sitting there like wondering and trying to figure out what's going on. And what probably happened there is like during this whole mobbing and mauling and chasing of this leopard, everyone within the troop got obviously seriously hyped up and brave and stand together. We're stronger together. Let's chase this leopard off. And this one particular baboon that stayed behind was probably just a little bit too cocky and stayed behind a little bit too long. Whereas the troop made their way off. They got out the area, continued with their day and kept feeding and just kept on doing what baboons do. And yeah, somehow this leopardess figured that, well, this little baboon is all alone now. And as long as it's in the tree, it can't get back to its family quick enough before leopard jumps in and kills it. So that whole afternoon, yes, that sighting probably, it started off early in the afternoon, which if I go look at the time here, at about 4 in the afternoon, excuse me. And she took a poor little thing down at, let's have a look here, at 5:30. So that was like an hour of what was a cat and mouse game between this leopardess and this poor little baboon. And throughout this whole sighting, this poor baboon was giving off these little bow, bow, like little contact calls and alarm calls to its family and say, hey, guys, freaking leopard's still here and I need your help because I'm not in a good spot at the moment. So this little baboon, as we had pulled in, leopard was watching this baboon who was high up in this like 4 or 5 story tall winterthorn tree. And we were sitting there trying to figure out, how's she going to do this? And with Carl's experience and his guiding background and knowledge, Richard's, our local guides, and then mine, and Jen and Brian had been on safari many a times, we all kind of knew that, oh, this girl's like sussing out and weighing out like how this is possible. And we started discussing about how there's no way she can hunt this baboon up in the tree, because I mean, she's going to race up this tree. And by that time, the baboon will just leap over to the next. And this is exactly what was happening, this cat and mouse. I've spent many hours over the years with leopard, and I don't think I've ever seen a leopard scale up a tree and then back down a tree. But literally, this tree is growing straight up. It's one solid, big, round like stump going straight up for easily 20, 30 meters. Easy. And this girl ran, like as we were discussing, like figuring out like, oh, this baboon's just going to jump from one tree to another. If it jumps and gets onto the ground and tries to runs away, then it's tickets, then it's over. And as we were discussing this amongst each other, boom, this girl just rockets up the tree. And I was just, before I knew what was happening, she was at the top of the tree. And I was like, what the hell? Did she just hunt this leopard? Like, what's happening? And then we just hear this, pow, again, from a tree that was just, there were two trees growing next to each other. And this little baboon had just jumped into the other tree. And this leopard standing in the fork of the tree, looking at this baboon, like, I'm going to get you. And this baboon tries to like scale down the tree it was in, while the leopard's in the other tree at the top of that canopy looking at it. And as that baboon was like 3/4 of the way down, this leopardess just flies, like literally it is, if she didn't even touch that tree, she just rockets straight down head first out of this tree and boom, hits the ground. By then, this little baboon's realized, flip, this leopard's coming down quick, and it rocketed straight back up into the tree it was in. So it was this continuous like up and down from one tree to another. And eventually, and this is how, where the intelligence and the strategy and the mind play and the game change and like the adaptation of a leopard will come in, because he knows the intelligence of the baboon, knowing that there's no way this cat's going to get me when I'm in the tree. So this leopardess decided, you know what, I'm changing tactic. And it's just such a beautiful thing to have been a part of, to actually not only watch that cat and mouse game, because that was flipping funny, it was exciting, it was mind-blowing, it was something that I've never seen before. But eventually this girl slowed the whole tactic and she got out the tree and she was obviously exhausted. You could see her panting. So she tried her luck. But eventually she like walked about 20 meters away from the tree that the baboon was in and the one she was scaling up and down in. And she went to go kind of lie flat down on the ground amongst not thick vegetation. You could see her lying there with binoculars, because we stayed a little further away from the tree. But you could see her lying there, but she was flat down, not moving a muscle. And her eyes were just pointing straight up into that canopy, like locked onto that baboon, not taking her eyes off of it. And I think her hopes was that baboon would come down that tree and just kind of try and run back to the family. And this baboon moved about one or two trees away, which weren't far from the trees it was in. It obviously jumped from canopy to canopy. And as it got down closer to kind of ground level, this leopardess took off, boom, out of the blue, like no one expected. And she just sort of rocketed straight up that tree again. Boom, baboon straight back up to the top of the canopy where it knows the leopard can't get it. And eventually, this happened once or twice. And eventually, this leopard realized, okay, I've got speed. I've got stamina. This baboon's family ain't going to come helping. So the only thing that's going to happen here is that the only way this baboon can get to its family is if it hits the ground and makes a run for it. And this leopardess was calculating, and I think she would have crept closer and closer, because every time she kind of retreated away from the tree this baboon was in, she was like maybe 5 or 6 meters closer to where she believes this monkey's or this baboon's going to exit the tree from. So she kind of edged closer every time, but she lay dead still every time she got into position, because in and amongst the foliage she was in, and that's how incredibly well their camouflage works, as long as she doesn't move, and when that monkey or baboon moves further and further away, it'll be more difficult for the baboon to see the leopard, especially if she's lying dead still, which she then did. She just lay dead still. And we were all discussing on the vehicle, we know as soon as that baboon hits the ground, it's no more. It is done. And this baboon is going to lose its life. We were sitting there patiently, quiet, like bated breath. And we were watching this little baboon like move and move and move and move and move. And we eventually lost sight of this baboon. We could still hear its little kind of alarm calls and barks. And I remember sitting there thinking, yo, how long is this actually going to take? Is she going to wait until nightfall? Like, what's going to happen? And eventually, this leopard just rockets and flies through the vegetation she was in amongst the trees. Our guide was so hot on the, I think he was the only one like still really seriously focused on like where things are and what's happening. But as she rockets off, Richard started that vehicle and he just gunned it. We flew into the direction where this leopard ran off into. And as we came through this slightly thicker area, we looked like, it was weird. Both myself and Carl kind of looked right at the same time as we got through this dense area. And this leopardess was on top of this baboon, busy strangling it. And both Carl and I are like, there she is. And like Richard hits the brakes, slams onto the brakes and turns right. And she was busy smothering this this young baboon. And as soon as she knew it was dead, she let go of it and she walked straight towards a mahogany and into the densest tree you can ever imagine. Now that again left us wondering. It was enough time for all the dust to settle. The forest went dead quiet again. And we were sitting there thinking, what did we just witness? Did we just witness a spite kill? Because she got mobbed and mauled and chased away by this baboon's troop. And she's like, killed this thing. And like, cool, done. My mission's complete. And then we started thinking, but why waste all that energy for just that? I mean, she's not going to, who can she boast to? There's nothing to brag about or brag to. And we then started figuring, nah, this might just be another tactic of hers to, she's now taken this baboon. Maybe this commotion of our vehicles, her running, the baboon calling. It was obviously, we didn't hear the squeal when the leopard jumped on the baboon, because our vehicle was obviously revving. But maybe the stress call from that baboon could have that could have been enough to make the troop realize, oh, flip, we've left one of ours behind. We need to go back and help. So I think we all then came to the conclusion that she jumped onto this thing, strangled it, and went into the densest, thickest tree to hide. And our guide Rich said, like, no, let's give it a few minutes. Like, all the other vehicles that were there eventually saw that and they were like, cool, they're happy, and they left. There was, I think it was us and two other vehicles. And Rich said, no, let's just sit here very quietly. We were all in agreement. We'll just sit quietly and let her come out in her own, at her own time again. And so we sat and we waited. And it was beautiful. Well, it was sad knowing that there was a poor little baboon that's just lost its life. But it was a beautiful, quiet, calm afternoon. We were close to the river. We could hear the hippos. We could hear elephants breaking trees, elephant herds trumpeting, birds calling. It was really a tranquil scene. And I still told the guests, like, let's take a moment just to really think about what we just got to experience, because this is something we will probably never, ever see again. And so we sat there. And eventually, this leopardess came down and out the mahogany tree, slowly walked back over towards this little baboon. She stood up, or she lay down beside it, kind of made sure it wasn't moving. She lay, looked at us for some time, kind of nudged, sniffed the baboon somewhat. And then eventually she picked it up as, and this was the craziest part, and like from a photographic perspective and the rarity thereof and just how special this moment was to see this predator take down probably one of its most challenging victims it would ever probably face, maybe other than a squirrel. But she picked this little baboon up with what seemed to be so much care on the back of the head and the nape, where she would pick her own cubs up by, so gently, and with this baboon, and I don't know if it's because it's so human-like, I don't know what it was, but she picked it up so gently, glanced at us, turned on the spot, and just slowly started walking away, straight back to that very mahogany, and up into it to then at that point probably start indulging in feeding on this baboon, because and then that kind of confirmed to us that this time that she spent wasn't just a spite kill. It was literally, I'm taking advantage of this. This particular year was extremely dry in the lower Zambezi. I was there in May, I was there in July, and it was at a point in which, in terms of the conditions, what would usually be seen at the end of September, like into October, like the peak of their dry season, and this was already hitting them in July. So I think we couldn't even really canoe in the channels this year because it was just, the water was so low. So it was good to see that opportunity that was presented to this cat. She grasped, like she took it on 100% and took that opportunity, just because she knows that, like, all cats are super, they're just so such opportunists, because they don't know when that opportunity will come up again. And she saw, well, this is going to be a tough fight. And she put in the time, she put in the patience. She had to adapt in normal hunting strategies and techniques in order to ensure her survival. That little baboon was trying its absolute best to do what it knows would be best for it, is stay in the canopy of the trees, because this is where it'll be safe. And then to a point where it just couldn't bear that stress factor anymore and sit in that canopy. And it just said, well, it's now or never. I'm going to hit the ground and run, because it maybe thought this leopard was far enough away, which, wrong move, little one, because that leopard was watching you. And it was just so special to be a part of a sighting like that, where, again, books were rewritten by these animals. And we could literally see nature unfold step for step in front of us, and the retakes, take one, take two, take three, that was happening in front of us is something that's just, it kind of shook us to the core when it happened. But the more we sat and kind of, and still now today, the more I think of it and sit on that, it just makes me realize just how incredibly lucky we were to be a part of that moment. And I can guarantee it'll probably be something I will never, ever get to see and witness again. And by the time of recording this, it is now June. 3rd of June, I head up to the Lower Zambezi in early July. And yeah, I know for sure it's going to be a next level mad action-packed safari experience, because the dogs there are next level, the lions, the leopards, even the elephants, the light, the canoeing, the hippos. That place is, if you want to be fueled by a safari experience like never before, the Lower Zambezi is the place. I had, after that safari, I actually hosted with Jen and Brian, and the guests who got to witness this this leopard hunt. We usually, during each trip, we chat about, okay, where's the next destination, what we're doing. And not much of that actually happened on this trip. And at the end of it, we said we'll be in touch, we'll get in touch and set up video calls and just chat about things. And they got back to me saying that, Mike, you know, we feel like we don't think we want to book anything else, because there's no way that there will ever be a safari experience after this one that'll ever top the experience they just had out here. And I mean, I couldn't but help agree with them. I mean, we had a sick time. We saw wild dogs chasing buffalo on that trip. We were on foot with a lion and jumping over waterways. We canoed past hippo and crocodile. We watched wild dog hunting impala multiple times. It was a crazy, crazy, crazy safari experience. And I just told him exactly what I told them after that sighting, and exactly what I tell every single guest, is just to always expect the unexpected. And they might think that this was their best safari experience. The next one might even be better. It may not. The next one's into Mana Pools. We're doing a 10-day trip there. And look, I would probably say it's not going to be better, because it's going to be damn tough to beat that one. But there's always something special on a safari. And what I was trying to get to with that is, I'm going back into the Lower Zambezi now in the hopes that I get to see something as crazy as I did on that week, on those 10-night safari. And I may see something even crazier. I may not. But I know one thing for sure is I'm going to leave, get on a plane and leave after the pleasures of the Lower Zambezi trip. I'm going to come back home and I'm going to sit myself down as soon as I walk in the doors. And I'm going to tell myself, damn, that was a good safari. That destination is just next level. So if you have not yet, if you've not heard of the Lower Zambezi, if you've not traveled to the Lower Zambezi, or even if you have, get back there. But if you haven't heard of it and you haven't been, get there. It is an absolute gem. It's been hidden for so many years, and I'll be more than happy to share any inside knowledge that I have of the destination. And I would love to explore it with you one day. So if you've got questions, please feel free to reach out. You can find me on Instagram, Michael Laubscher, or you can just email me, michael@wild-eye.com. And I will happily answer your questions. As I said in the beginning of this episode, this destination is hands down one of, if not my favorite safari destination in Africa. Due to various different aspects, animals and wildlife, rewriting books, animal diversity, activity diversity, the camps, the staff, the food, the everything is just, to me, like a perfect safari. So get in touch and I'll happily assist. But thank you again for your ears, and I hope you have a great day further. Cheers for now.
And there you go. It's amazing. Those things don't happen often, but when they do, it's absolutely priceless. I can think of one or two of my own, but I'll tell those in a different episode. So I do think that's why we keep on going back again and again, is you never know what you're going to get. I remember years ago, someone would say, don't you get tired of going to the Masai Mara or Madikwe or Sabi, especially when you're working in the industry? It's like, no, man, I can drive the same road again and again. Nothing will ever be the same. That's the magic. So, as always, thank you for listening, guys. Thank you for lending us your ears. If you have any questions, jerry@wildeye.com. You can also hit up the Wild Eye office email at info@wildeye.com if you have any questions on how you can go in search of your own amazing sightings like Mike shared with us. That's it for this week. Have a good one. Thanks for listening. Chat to you next time. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye.